This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Babe, how would you say your social battery is right now?
Probably non-existent since having Bear, but it's slowly coming back and I'm almost ready to get back out there and host a game night, babe. It's been too long.
I'm ready for that too.
I would say after having a baby, we've been in survival mode and haven't had a lot of extra time for socializing, but we're getting there.
Yeah, I agree. But at the same time, we both know it's important to surround ourselves with community during hard times. So it's been a tough balance that we're trying to manage. We actually talked about this in therapy recently, and it's been really helpful to dig into.
We've been open about getting back into therapy after having our third baby, and it's been a great game changer for us. We recommend it to literally anyone, not just couples going through a hard season. It's a great place to learn how to set boundaries, communicate, and learn how to build a social life without draining your battery.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, BetterHelp is an amazing option.
It's all online, so you can do whatever fits best with your schedule, which is perfect for us, especially with three babies.
You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and they let you switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp.
Visit BetterHelp.com/EastFam today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/EastFam. Let's get back to it.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Couple Things.
With Sean and Andrew.
A podcast all about couples.
And the things they go through.
Today, it's about us, though. And kind of about you. Because we're doing another advice episode where you guys have submitted your stories, your questions, your personal thoughts and feelings. And we are going to respond to them.
Just going to give you our hot take thoughts. Maybe provide a different perspective. That's what we're here for. Maybe just thinking about something in a different way than you think about it. For the longest time, we always said, we're not here to give advice. We're not qualified. And that's actually why I started my PhD.
In psychology.
I think maybe it's like a self-image problem where I don't feel qualified to give advice.
But yes.
Now in this process,
I feel like you should learn that in your PhD that it is a you thing.
Well, I am starting 6 more hours of credits.
Good job.
This week. Great. We haven't talked about that.
Great.
But I'm very excited.
Yeah.
Talking about different issues like behavioral science, groupthink.
Yeah.
I'm learning a lot and I'm enjoying it. And I like having one topic to dig into deeply.
Yes.
And I like reading books. But I also had to write 2 25-page papers in 1 week.
And you got mad. And I was like, this is 100% your fault.
100%. Well, I wasn't complaining. I was just upset. Fine line?
Very fine line. I also want to add, new in the news that I read today was, did you know they put an intimacy ban on the Olympic Village in 2020 in Tokyo?
Tell me more.
They banned athletes from having naked time.
So they do say that that's one of the most, it's the most condoms distributed.
Yes, at that event more than any other event in the world.
That in nursing homes, I believe.
I will say, can I just add, I have no personal experience here. I was a child at the Olympics, so I have no information on this. I'm just going off what I've been told. But they actually banned athletes from getting intimate in 2020. They have since, as of today, lifted that ban for Paris, and people don't know how to feel about it. How do you feel about it?
This issue is near and dear to my heart, is how I feel. When we were first dating, there was an article that came out on ESPN. I'm looking at it now.
About this topic.
I believe it's called Sex in the Olympic Village.
Yes.
And who else is featured in that article but yours truly, Sean Johnson?
Which is absolutely twisted.
It is.
Why would ESPN include me in this article when I was at the Olympic Village as a 16-year-old kid?
And they acknowledge that she was then 16 years old. Anyway, we can link the article. It's not about her naked time. But it's funny that you're one of the few athletes mentioned in that article.
Like, that's twisted.
So I was like, pretty taken aback. I was like, all right, I mean, we're going to have to address this at some at some point. But what do I think about the issue as a whole? You get a bunch of young 20-somethings together.
Yeah.
In like the peak physical shape they've ever been in. In some ways, it's not surprising. In other ways, though, it's like you would think that you'd be the most focused on getting the job done of your sport.
But I don't think that includes this. I think it's the celebration.
So you do, you perform.
Yeah, because most of these athletes like might perform day two of the Olympics, but be living in the village for 3 weeks.
Man, I bet there's some other nonsense beyond just naked time that goes down. You have a bunch of like, you know, people just hanging out, not having anything else to do.
Mm-hmm.
They finally have concluded their training regimen that they've
been on. What's the other stuff you think might go down there, Andrew?
I don't know. Like, I have no idea. I have no idea.
I will say my first thought to the ban and now the like lifting of the ban and like that it's a thing is like, why do you all care? Why does anybody care? Like,
well,
what do you,
like,
why do you,
differences? So like, yeah, if you're the host country and it's more of a reserved culture, then that would be an issue, you know? You are extrapolating your cultural expectations from the U.S. onto like Japan, and it's a
this
totally different.
We're not
vibe.
Just talking about the U.S. though. We're talking about like.
That's what I'm saying.
Every country partakes.
That's what I'm saying to you.
I know, but my whole thought is, why do you care what people are doing off like in their pastime? All you care about with the Olympics is like watching people compete.
Well, now we know that that's all you care about.
No, that's.
What about sport being the thing that forms and shapes young people of character? Huh? What about that, Sean?
I don't know. I think it's weird.
We're going to start doing some personal debriefs and maybe some light topical discussion at the beginning of these episodes, because we did say we were going to give you advice, but we just wanted to try that out. I kind of like it.
I did.
You have anything else? Any other updates on your end? Oh, we started a gratitude journal.
We did. It's called the 5-Minute Journal.
Yeah.
It's good. I like it.
Our buddies from RO, who we interviewed, Joey and Heath, you can check out that episode, just spoke at a church here in Nashville about doing a digital fast, which then got us down this rabbit hole of how do we live more intentionally. One of the things we're trying to do is like only use our devices when necessary for work purposes, because, you know, this time we with our kids is fleeting. So the gratitude journal is going to be our new way that we're hoping to start and finish each day.
Yes.
We'll let you know how it goes.
Yeah.
But
should we dive in?
Let's dive in.
Okay. We have 20 questions below where you guys have asked for our advice or our thoughts. They're good. They're interesting. Let's start with number one.
Advice on battling resentment towards your spouse during the postpartum weeks.
Have you ever felt that, Andrew?
What is that word, resentment? And I'm not familiar with the whole concept.
In full transparency, Andrew and I have gone back into marriage counseling, which I think is so beneficial, because postpartum can be so difficult. The transition is difficult. Resentment, how do you deal with it? I think things like the gratitude journal help.
Wow.
Like finding little things throughout the day that center your perspective as to like what's actually the truth.
Yeah. Not to get too philosophical, but it's like, it's not even what's the truth. It's what's your perceived truth.
Yes.
Like what you're choosing to be true. I think about, if I'm reflecting on the postpartum periods that we've gone through, I think it requires the most amount of generosity,
mm-hmm,
of perspective and of intentions. Like, I'm being generous with assuming Sean's intentions were XYZ. And it, like, it's an aspect of almost being charitable too. Like it is an effort when she's short with me, or like, you know, in the middle of the night when the baby's crying and you can't hear each other, to like, to give each other the benefit of the doubt. Mm-hmm. That's super hard to do.
It's where the most grace is needed. It's where the most patience is needed. It's where the most forgiveness, everything is needed. But you're sleep deprived, you're hormonal, your entire life has changed, your identity has changed. So like when you put all that together, it can be really hard.
Yeah, it takes the most self-awareness too. Like, okay, you didn't get as much sleep last night, so now maybe you're coming off a little more short, and then your spouse maybe tells you that, and then you can either be defensive or you can be self-aware and say, yeah, you know, I probably am. That's where that there's so much effort required, mm-hmm. where it's like taking a pause, not going with that initial instinctive, like, no, I'm not tired. Mm-hmm. Let's quit. And it's just like, oh.
You're on edge.
Take a deep breath. Yeah, you're right. I have the self-awareness to know I didn't sleep well last night, and I'm sorry. I'm a little short. And then it's the other person's job to be charitable in that. But I also think, like, I also think it's a phase. So just, I think it's this carry on, you know, keep stacking days. And the further away you get from the birth, I think the further out of the woods of postpartum you get.
I will say, to go back to the 5-minute journal, props to doing this. Each day you have to put like a daily affirmation for yourself. And I don't know why I thought of this, but what came to my mind today that I wrote in, I think falls in line with this. And it's, I just kind of thought of that phrase, this too shall pass. Mm. But then I also thought, like, don't miss it.
Yeah.
Because 100%. You can get so caught up in the postpartum phase of being like, oh, it's just a phase. It's going to be over. Just hold your breath and like it'll be done.
Yeah.
But it's also one of the most special periods of time. So.
Yeah, it is an art to try to be present. the journal we're doing, we just found it. I just Amazoned gratitude journals. We're not like woo-woo people. I think if you've listened to any of our stuff, you know that. We're not like yogis or like... you know, we're just people.
Which is not a bad thing.
No, but here's where we're at. It's we're willing to try anything to to like preserve our marriage and to make it the most meaningful it can be and to be the most intentional with our kids. So we're trying this out. I think it's really part of our like read devotionals and then do that. I view it as almost a prayer. Mm-hmm. So, side note.
Okay, next up. How to talk to grandparents about, quote, showing up to my kids' activities. They live in town. They just don't show up.
Interesting.
That is interesting.
We kind of just talked about this as a family, didn't we? One thing that we learned from our siblings was like, hey, you should ask.
Yeah.
Don't assume that your grandparents will show up, the grandparents will show up, because maybe they don't want to overstep, right? So say, hey, mom, would love for you to come to little Billy's soccer game, and then see what the response is from there. I think if there's like hesitation or I think an unwillingness to show up, then that's a different issue. But like, you know, do what you can, which is ask, invite them.
And I would also say something we learned with siblings and talking about this conversation with our parents as well is like, be specific. Say, this Friday, mom, dad, at 4 p.m., little Billy has a baseball game at this place. Can you please be there? It would mean a lot to them. Like, truly make it specific. So there's no room for interpretation, room for people to feel like they're missing or overstepping or whatever. Like, make it specific and be like, I want you there.
Yeah. I've been thinking recently about my unwillingness to have crucial conversations myself. This maybe feels like conflict to some people. Maybe it doesn't feel like conflict to some people, having the conversation with your parents about not showing up. But like, if it's important to you that they're there, then have the conversation, because you're either going to have that awkwardness or pain of having an uncomfortable conversation, or you're going to have the long-term resentment that is also painful.
Yeah.
So like, you know, pick your poison. Next up, advice for toddler behavior changes after having a baby, going from sweet and gentle to hitting in tantrums.
This one makes me sad. Your kid's life has just been turned upside down. Literally upside down. So however they're acting out, they're acting out in like a desperation of hanging on to the life that they know. And even though it might be hard, or they might be acting out in ways that you don't agree with, you have to like take them by the hand, squeeze their little face, spend time with them and like reassure them that they still have their mommy and daddy. They still like get their time. They still get attention. They still have value. They still are important. Like you, they're little babies. They want to know that this new kid isn't taking their place.
I think this is something you and I struggle with, was our kids. I think at the end of the day, they want your attention,
mm-hmm.
right? So if they get your attention from being helpful and going to get diapers or, you know, playing with toys, or if they get your attention from hitting in tantrums,
mm-hmm.
all they want is your attention. So trying to be really diligent with saying, hey, I'm going to give them attention with these things that I want to encourage,
mm-hmm.
but also not freak out and give them that quote unquote yeah. attention when they aren't behaving. Cause then that'll kind of just like be almost become an echo chamber. If they're like, oh, when I act out, then I finally get my parents' attention. So it's like, it's definitely a longer game and harder, but
also realizing it's normal for your kids to be acting out with the transition of a new baby. So yeah. don't ignore them. Because that would make the situation worse. If all they're doing is acting out, don't just ignore the acting out.
Yeah, sorry, I'm not saying that either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to like...
I'm saying give more attention. Give even more attention to the other things.
Yes. But truly see them. And just because they're older and maybe more self-sufficient, don't feel like they don't need as much time with you as they did before. Because they do.
Hey, but also, you're doing a great job. I want to say that too. The fact that you're even curious about this
yeah.
means you're doing a great job.
Yeah.
So don't get all down on yourself.
Okay. How can I stay motivated to work out every day? My motivation is at an all-time low. That's totally fine.
You don't need to work out every day. No. That would be a grind.
That would be a grind.
Yeah, you don't need that.
And did you know a workout could just be like going outside and going for a little walk? Yeah. That constitutes a workout.
What are your thoughts on this, babe?
It sounds like you don't have any motivation because the working out that you were doing was something that you fell out of love with. So try something new. Go for a walk. Jump on a trampoline. Join a roller skating derby. Try hiking. Try something new. But I feel like we get this idea in our minds that working out has to be in a gym, on a treadmill, lifting weights, doing burpees, whatever it is, going to a yoga class. It doesn't. It could be so many different things.
Yeah. Also, maybe working out with a friend or a group mm-hmm. of people could help. I don't know if this person has kids or not, but it's like motivation is almost a feeling, right? And feelings are so variable. So we're kind of writing a book on this, actually, TBD. But like, what are the commitment mechanisms that you can put in place to achieve your goals? And I'm not saying that working out is the most important thing, but if you feel like this is a phase of life where you need to focus on that, then like commit to certain things that give you the highest probability of making that happen. So like if you go over to your neighbor's house and say, hey, every morning at 6 a.m., let's go on a jog, then now your neighbor who's right there
mm-hmm.
is an accountability partner, or, you know, like there's different ways to go about it. I think understanding that working out is not the most important thing in life. Again, there's phases, is also important. So balanced perspective builds longevity in the whole thing. Don't burn yourself out or get super discouraged. Just realize that tomorrow's a new day. Next, as an only child, how can I create a stronger relationship with my sister-in-laws? Interesting.
That's interesting.
How qualified are you, only child?
I absolutely adore my sister-in-laws. And I think I've learned a lot from them because all of them have siblings. So I'm the only child in the family. So I've just learned a lot from them in the questions that they ask me and how they interact with me, of like what they're comfortable with as a sister, like that sibling dynamic, because I never experienced it. And I would just say, how can you...
Wait, you ask them questions?
I don't know how to say it. How do I say this? So picture growing up in a household without siblings and only having friend relationships. There are boundaries with friends of like what's too far, what's too much, what's too intimate, what's too vulnerable. You don't have that like deep. There's no relationship as deep as like a sibling, right?
Right, yeah.
And so when I married into this family and I had all these sister-in-laws, I was like, I don't know, like, what do we talk about since we're sisters, not friends? Like, it's a new relationship I've never experienced that I had to learn.
Interesting.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I kind of just learned by observation, and I have the best sister-in-laws in the world who just plow right through. I mean, the very first time I met my future sister-in-law, we shared a bed together in a hotel. But how can you create a strong relationship? Spend more time, be more vulnerable, ask more questions, and lean on them. Like, truly lean on them as if they are your sisters, because they are.
Yeah. Building a strong relationship, that's really interesting. I have been thinking about the power of asking somebody a favor.
Mm-hmm.
And that practice, in a lot of ways, builds a stronger relationship. So, like, I think it shows humility. It invites the other person in. It's endearing because, you know, it's like, now you're going to probably do this activity together. I think it increases the amount of communication you have. Because, all right, so, like, this is something my brother did really well with my dad that I did not do, but built a stronger relationship with my dad by asking him, hey, Dad, our door is all squeaky or it's off its hinges. Can you come over and help? So like the door is whatever. It's insubstantial and inconsequential.
Mm-hmm.
But now Dad's going to go over to his house. They're going to call about, you know, when work's to come over there. Do I need to bring any tools? That is like an interaction that otherwise would not have happened. And then now they have like this little memory that Dad a month from now can be like, hey, JD, how's the door?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like ask favors.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes a long way.
And trust them.
Yeah.
Did we answer that question? I'm not sure.
Yeah. You have four new sisters. Is that right?
I do. Christine, and they're the best.
Andrea, Katie, Zoe.
I have four sisters.
Yo, our family is high. Dude, I freaking love
our family is amazing.
Every single one
I have
one
four
of them,
sisters,
man.
And I have three brothers.
Dang. Talking about each, saying their names puts a smile on my face because each one is so awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Sex life after baby while breastfeeding. You're saying mine is basically non-existent 8 months postpartum.
What are we, 3 months postpartum?
Yeah.
We've had several naked times. Not many, but several.
We've done well.
We've had 2.5. I'm kidding.
I think we've had more than that.
I agree. No, I don't count though.
Yeah, that was so weird.
I just want to say some number and a half.
You wanted to say a half.
Yeah.
Okay.
What does that even mean?
I don't know. I think it is a period of time that's awkward, uncomfortable, inconvenient. You're like redating your spouse. Your body is weird. It's still in the postpartum phase. Breastfeeding is awkward because you are leaking, or like it's just awkward. And I think it's a time where you kind of have to like, how do I say, like be sacrificial a little bit? I don't know how to say that. Like, if you're postpartum and you're not feeling yourself, that's also, like, not 100% fair to your spouse to just be like, well, I'm not in the mood for 8 months. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, after having just talked about postpartum depression, it's like, yeah, well, of course there's less sex in the postpartum period.
Yeah.
It's like there's already tension. There's so much transition. There's less time. There's more logistical concern, whatever. Yeah, I think in some ways it's almost like an engine that you need to prime first. And it's like it builds momentum is what I'm saying. So maybe the first step is sacrificial, to use your term. Not the first step. No. The first interaction is sacrificial. But then it's like, oh, hey, you know, now we're feeling a little more connected. Next time feels less sacrificial. And the momentum, yeah, the momentum builds. So, but getting to that first one, or actually, the first, like, I don't know, let's just say five, doesn't feel super romantic.
No, you're, it, yeah, it's, you just gotta like work on it.
You're saying it's something that you need to do.
I think you should.
It's super interesting. I don't disagree with you.
Because how do I explain this? I feel like there's this weird period of time postpartum towards the end of pregnancy where like you get a little bit more distant from your husband. We've talked about this. You become more mom and dad, less husband and wife. And if you let that time just continue to build of being less husband and wife and more mom and dad and more roommates or more friends or more co-parents, and you just like kind of let it build, it gets harder to like make a move, be intimate, break through that barrier. So it's like if you can kind of start cutting into that time frame, because like you get 8 months into it where your sex life is non-existent, then it becomes like strangers. It becomes harder to like initiate because your routine, you're used to something else.
I'm trying to think of an analogy. Best I got is Play-Doh. If you leave it out of the container too long, it doesn't.
It
becomes less malleable. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Interesting.
I'm working on the
any
analogy.
Words associated with Play-Doh potentially could be wrong.
I also think just check the, what do you call that? Pronoun? The mine? Is that a pronoun? Check your tense. I was never good at language.
I wasn't.
But instead of, it's not my sex life. It's our sex
ours.
Life.
Yeah.
Just a little perspective shift. Next, advice on the best games if you're just starting out with the game night with your friends. Let's freaking go.
Game night is the best.
Dude,
I think.
Let's go.
I'm feeling like next month might be our first time back.
Don't push it.
Okay.
Maybe.
Maybe 2 months.
We're in a postpartum desert with not just naked time, but also with game night. So.
But we're not.
Okay.
Okay. All
right. Cheeky.
I know. Spoons. I think that's the best game night game to start with.
Spoons or, shoot, what's the detective one that we played? Why can't I think of it? What in the heck?
Detective one.
It's Cornhole, obviously, is a big one. Bottle Bash is awesome. What's the one? It's the game of the decade. Babe, come on.
Werewolf?
Oh, I freaking love Werewolf.
Werewolf is too complicated.
I
for
agree.
A first time game night.
I agree. Ticket to Ride? No, the one where you have to Clue, not Clue. The one where I say a word and then you have to say the associated words. Sean for five.
Oh.
Oh my gosh, are you serious? Why
I don't
can't
know.
We think of this? I'm going to find it. Please hold. I'm just going through board games right now.
Wow, those are old time board games.
Yeah.
It's like the
yeah.
What about catchphrase would be great? We did this game.
Code names.
Code names. There we go. So those are all great. We got to move on.
We have a whole game night kind of workbook or no procedure that we have. It's a how to host a game night.
I also think
we've never shared that.
I also think one of my favorite games we've ever played is that dice game where you have to write
Midnight
to 100.
Madness. Look that up.
It's
that gets wild.
It's like ultimate panic feeling. Okay. Next question. Can you be, quote, too close with your parents? What are the boundaries there?
I think I have a different perspective on that. Yes.
Yes.
You think yes.
Yes.
Go ahead.
I have two thoughts. One, biblically speaking, make sure you like leave and cleave. Your spouse needs to be your priority. So when you get married, you need to like leave your parents and make your spouse your number one. So the too close, in my opinion, would be if you're still confiding in your parents over your spouse, that's too close.
I agree.
Then you aren't like truly honoring your marriage. The second with boundaries would be just like,
All right. So our two oldest kids have been loving science experiments. We post about it all the time on Instagram. And lately we've been trying to find better ways to keep and continue their curiosity going.
Yes. And so I found KiwiCo with Drew when she was an infant, but have since graduated Drew and Jet, our two oldest, to like their science boxes, which helps them with like engineering, robotics, technology. And they love getting their hands dirty and in it. And the things that KiwiCo comes up with is amazing. So each month, if you subscribe or get a membership, you get a new box in the mail for your kid to open, and it's filled with goodies. I remember this as an infant, and it was amazing.
Awesome.
But now as a toddler, it's even cooler. They get to discover and build and create things with their science boxes that are amazing.
The activities are nonstop. You get to do things like engineering, robots. There's learning about science of ice cream. That was one of our kids' favorite. Yes. But they always do age-appropriate things as well, which is really cool and important. It allows the teaching and learning process to go really smoothly.
Yes. My favorite thing about KiwiCo is that their boxes are age-appropriate. So as your kid gets older, the boxes develop with them. And it also kind of tells you where they should be developmentally. I remember as a parent, it's when I started KiwiCo as a kid, like as an infant, I loved that it gave parents tips to kind of encourage the educational process for your kid. It can be hard to find creative ways to keep your child engaged, challenged, and off their screens, but KiwiCo does the work for you so you can spend quality time tackling projects together.
That's right. So redefine learning with play. Explore projects that build confidence and problem-solving skills with KiwiCo.
Get 50% off your first month on any crate line at KiwiCo.com with promo code COUPLE.
That's 50% off your first month at KiwiCo.com, promo code COUPLE. If you know me, you know I love cereal. Our whole family does, and growing up, cereal was one of the best parts of being a kid. But now that I'm older, I know it's important to watch out for empty carbs and extra sugar. So I took a little break there from eating so much cereal, but now I've tried Magic Spoon. And Magic Spoon has classic flavors and the crunch you love, but it has way less sugar and it's high in protein.
We love Magic Spoon in the East household. I always get the variety pack. It has four flavors, cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter. This pack has 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and 4 to 5 grams of net carbs with only 140 calories. Per serving. It's high protein, has 0 grams of sugar, it's keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, and soy-free.
It's pretty wild to think a cereal can be high in protein and low carb and still taste delicious, but it does. I love eating a bowl of the fruity flavor after a workout for some extra protein, and Sean here loves the cocoa flavor as a snack before bed. We think everyone should try Magic Spoon and taste the difference themselves. Go to magicspoon.com/eastfam to grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code EASTFAM at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked.
Remember, start the new year off right with a delicious bowl of high-protein cereal at magicspoon.com/eastfam. And use our code EASTFAM to save $5 off.
Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode.
Making sure you have space as husband and wife in space, like, I don't know. No, that's the only thing I would think of.
I agree with your understanding that our family now takes priority.
Yeah.
It's still a really, really special treasured relationships with your parents, and it can be super close, but it should not be. Go ahead.
Keep going.
What?
I have another thought.
No, you got it.
On that same exact thought of like, make sure you're prioritizing your marriage over your parents. A rule that Andrew and I have in our marriage that we are taught by our premarital counselor that I feel like we've done a really good job with. It's something that means a lot to us is don't ever speak poorly of your spouse to your parents. Mm. And it's because your parents will always take your side. And you don't want your parents to have any resentment or ill will towards your spouse.
Yeah.
It doesn't do anybody any good.
Next.
Okay.
Best book to read before becoming a first-time parent if you had to choose only one. There's about 5 that come to mind. And we have done these in newsletters as well if you want to see a more extensive list. and I've not put this one on that list yet. My answer would be The Meaning of Marriage by Tim Keller.
Yeah.
And I say that in light of our recent situation where you realize parenting really can be the most joyful, amazing, magical experience, or it can be the most stressful, divisive drag, like it can be. And I think the quality of the marriage determines that.
Mm-hmm.
So The Meaning of Marriage for us was pivotal in understanding how to navigate that. What do you think?
I would say I agree 100%. I think you should read that book. I think it's amazing. One of my favorite books that I read, just speaking as a first-time parent, in my mind that goes to like first-time pregnancy, first-time mom. I really liked The Mama Natural only because it explained so much of what you go through. That was it.
I did not read that book, so cannot recommend it.
No.
Next, advice.
And it wouldn't be for you to read.
Okay. Advice for our geography conflict. My family lives in California. My spouse's family is in Ohio. How do we choose which set of parents to live by? Wow. The problems of modern day dating, huh? Or like people go off to different states to go to college and then mm-hmm. they meet their spouse. And then, yeah, it's a little more complicated now. That happened to us.
It did happen to us.
We just chose a third city neutral location that was decently close to both of our families.
Yep.
And also you were an only child.
But so San Diego and Ohio is pretty hard.
I don't know where you got San Diego. It's really interesting. California. I guess you're thinking about that subconsciously.
I was thinking of Guy and Andrea. Yeah. They were San Diego and Indiana. I think it's really hard. I think you have to have a lot of conversations about it. I like how we did it because we like chose a third city neutral location to like form our foundation, our family. Now we're having more conversations about like where do we want to end up with kids long term. That's hard. It's very hard.
Here's my hot take rule of thumb. You should move to the location where the primary caregiver for the children is most supported. Do you agree with that?
Mm-hmm.
Whoever's with the kids more and most and has to do the schools and the friends and the, that's where you should move. What do you think?
I agree.
You don't agree?
I do agree.
No, you don't.
I do agree. I also think it's more complicated. I think it's more complicated because Andrew and I have had these conversations a lot, and it's a very hard conversation to have because at the end of the day, someone's like
sacrificing.
Yeah. But I think it becomes a question of like kids. What's best for your kids?
I agree.
Period. So.
So I feel like we're going to have a follow-up convo on
that. Maybe Sunday.
All right. Any tips to not be defensive in an argument and to be a better listener? Wow. Man.
Repeat what the other person said before you respond. We learned that. It like immediately disarms you. A counselor taught us that. So like if Andrew's telling me how he feels or something, I first need to respond to him and summarize what he said.
Yeah.
So it's like, I hear you saying X, Y, and Z, because it gives him the opportunity to say, oh no, you actually interpreted that not how I meant it. And it makes me actually listen to him instead of form a defense as he's speaking.
Yeah, and it forces you for the first thing that you say as a listener to not be defensive and to rather be almost like encouraging and like welcoming to what that other person is saying. That's so freaking hard, though.
Do we do that?
No.
No.
I don't know the answer to this question.
Yeah.
Because so easily for me, in an attempt to not be defensive, I'll just be apathetic almost or be quiet.
Yeah.
And then that also doesn't do the conflict or conversation any good. because, you know, it's a two-way street.
Mm-hmm.
So the one person should not just be quiet. It's very, very hard. I don't know. Please share your tips for those listening. I'm looking straight at the camera. Please. Please. Was that too dramatic?
Yeah.
Okay.
Next one. Weaning off the pacifier when it feels impossible. How do you do it?
Mm.
Well, it took us a few attempts with Drew. People get on such high horses with pacifiers. No kid is going to college with a pacifier. It's totally fine.
Also.
So like chill out about
it. Yeah. Like, okay, maybe it warps their teeth a little bit, but they're just starter pack teeth to be replaced by adult teeth later. So.
Yeah.
I'm not that concerned about it.
I'm not either. And people have gotten on us because we allow our kids to have pacifiers till like they're three, which also they're three. It's just three. The way we did it with Drew is.
But our kids look like they're seven. So
they do.
Anyway, there's that.
Yeah. People are like, why does your 7-year-old have a pacifier? If you're seven, I had a pacifier until I was six. I literally had a conversation with Santa about my pacifier.
Wow.
Yeah. And I gave it away when I was six and I never had braces and I'm just perfectly fine, guys. Anyways, the way we did it with Drew, we tried it when she was two. It didn't work. It just didn't work. She was not emotionally ready for it.
I just posted a video on that. That was hilarious. Shine did this whole fairy thing where she hung, she took all the passies, put them in a bag, hung them from a tree.
The fairy came and got it, left a present.
I think I got a clip of Sean saying, oh my gosh, I can't believe we're finally doing it.
Drew was so excited.
Fast forward about 5 minutes, meltdown, we give her the passy, and then it took like five more months.
Yeah.
But
when she was three, I felt like she mentally could understand it better. So we talked about it a lot. We talked about like giving it to babies who really needed it. And just kind of got her into a place where she was better with it. It took two nights where I would cuddle with her and kind of sleep with her just for like comfort. And then she was perfectly fine. So I think just understanding, you don't have to force it. Just like wait till your kid's ready.
We did hear about, I guess it's a system where you buy a kit of passies that progressively get smaller.
Yeah.
Have you heard of that?
Yeah.
Anyway, I've heard that's worked for other
people. We also tried with Drew to do like, poke the hole in the passy and stuff, and she'd just be like, it's broken.
Yeah.
I need a new one. So.
All right, next. Navigating singleness when all you want is a husband and family. It's so hard. Mm. It's going to be okay. Yeah, it's going to be okay.
Don't find yourself desperately looking for a husband. I don't think it works that way. I think you need to find peace in yourself first. And in doing that, you'll find a partner. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm just trying to evaluate how true it is. No offense. It does make sense. I don't know. This gets harder and harder. Like if the longer you go single, I think gets more difficult for a couple of reasons. One is that the pool shrinks, right? Everyone else pairs up. I guess my first thought is like get involved and committed to things where you might interact with a potential spouse. So like don't just go home and think about how sad you are because you don't have a spouse. Build your hobbies. Build your interests. You're going to be more interesting on the next date as a result. And you're also going to get involved in clubs or groups or teams where you might end up meeting that person. That's my thought. Also, go to church. That's what I would say.
Yeah.
Go to church. Any other thoughts on that?
No.
But it's going to be okay. I do want you to know that.
Next up, supporting your spouse when they're not getting along with their own parents. What is my role as a spouse in that? That feels a little confused for me.
What do you mean?
It's not fun to not get along with your parents. But when you're asking what is my role as a spouse in that, I would say your role is spouse. I think it's confusing to me because, like, you should be each other's number one, like, confidants, teammates, hype men, cheerleaders, supporters. So you should be, like, the person they're leaning on.
Yeah. I think when in doubt, the right decision is always what brings you in closer community with other people. So the right decision is not to take sides against the parents, like, and be really territorial or, like, defensive. Mm-hmm. You should support your spouse and maybe not really get involved on the parent side. Yeah. You know? Just support your spouse.
Yeah.
Be a listening ear.
Yeah. That's hard. I feel like I need more context.
Next, when you're feeling lost or miserable after achieving a big goal in life, how do you find clarity and peace again? Holy smokes, that's a big one.
I have a very simple answer. You put too much of your identity in your big goal and not enough in God. It's a biblical answer. It is a religious answer. I apologize, but that's how I feel.
How did you? Miss Gold Medalist.
I thought an Olympic gold medal, from the way society talked about it, would take care of everything in life. It would make me feel fulfilled, complete, whole. Literally, like, society puts such a weight on success for, like, completing you. And I got there and I was like, wow, what do I do now? Because this doesn't feel... I don't feel euphorically complete. And I think it's because I put my identity in it and I put too much weight on it. It was amazing. It was the most wonderful accomplishment. I achieved it. But, like, if who I am is put into a medal, then that's pretty, I don't know.
Shallow?
Yeah.
I think of the saying, it's about the journey, not the destination. And I think this is part of why that concept is important. Like, it's an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So now that you're having to retroactively answer this question, mm-hmm. How do I find clarity and peace since I put all my eggs in this basket of finding or of achieving my big goal? And I did that and I got nothing now. Mm-hmm. What happens? It's easier to, like, to cure that along the way. But yeah, it's also interesting. What is the biggest goal and why do you feel like you haven't achieved that? So why did you get derailed from what your biggest goal is? Whether that's like, okay, I made $10 million, but now I don't have any friends. What was your biggest goal? Which of those two? So don't lose sight of the most important things is what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm. My personal experiences with this was exactly how it's written. Like, I felt very lost. I felt very miserable after achieving the Olympics. And finding clarity and peace, it took me, like, my biggest fear and insecurity at the Olympics in that phase of life was, like, am I enough? Am I worthy? Basically. And it took me not working, not having money, not having, like, a title to my name, being a normal person that learned that I was, like, lovable by Andrew, that I was still enough for my God. That's how I found the clarity and peace again, is, like, if you stripped all that away, are you still happy?
So it's almost like a spiritual or a self-image issue.
Mm-hmm.
Of how do you see yourself? That's fascinating. I also think of the importance of mentors or friends or family, sitting down with them and saying, hey, what do I do now? You know, seeking advice. Goes back to building strong relationships too. Hey, can I ask you a favor and sit down with you to get advice? That'll I don't know, at least give you something to do. But congrats on achieving your big goal. Next, how can I support my wife when she's overwhelmed with our new baby, but I'm working all day? Yes, that's a good question. Sean?
It's hard to know an answer to that because that's not our experience. And I don't know your exact situation. My first thought is, can you help her find a friend or some sort of support system during the day? I'm also aware that that could require something financially, which not everybody has.
Finding a friend?
I'm saying finding support during the day. Wow.
Yeah. Just to give her space to step away?
Yeah. I think also if you're gone at night or during the day, maybe take the nights for her to feel more supported so she's more rested during the day.
Empathy is the first word that comes to mind. Just understand that it's a lot of work. So being there, I think being her friend, it is a pretty isolating experience those first couple months we talk about. But also the idea of being hospitable. So in whatever way you can, try to think of her before she gets there.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about that in the John and Ashley Marsh interview. But that thoughtfulness goes a long way, I think. Next, advice on finding your passion or hobbies. After kids, I kind of lost myself and don't know what I enjoy mm-hmm. doing for fun anymore.
I feel that. I'd say try new things. Try a bunch of things. We had someone tell us to make a list. No, it was just me, actually. a mentor told us that I needed to go on a hunt for new hobbies because I couldn't tell you what I enjoy doing for fun either. And it was to make a long list of hobbies and work on trying each one once or twice to see what I want to start doing for fun.
Yeah, I think you got to tinker around, try it out, be willing to fail, start over. You got this.
Any tips for a successful long distance marriage?
Or relationship in general. We've never done long. You went on a 6-month tour our first year of marriage.
Mm-hmm.
I think you got to go out of your way to connect.
Mm-hmm.
I am really bad at when I'm with another group of people, face to face with them.
Nobody else in the world exists.
Which is simultaneously an awesome quality and a terrible one.
It is.
So I usually I did a 6-day rafting trip for a buddy's bachelor party.
He didn't exist on the face of the earth.
I did. I was able to call you a couple times, and I did, but I did not call you often.
No.
So
I don't think we would thrive long distance. You guys, I was so nervous about having thin, broken hair after having Bear, but no joke, I feel like my hair is at its healthiest point ever.
I agree.
Thanks. Thanks to Vegamore, sticking to my hair routine has never been easier, even in the postpartum days. Vegamore products are 100% cruelty-free and are never formulated with harmful chemicals like parabens or hormones, which is really important to us. I've made it a part of my daily routine for the past 6 months, and I am so happy with the way my hair looks and feels. I've actually had people ask me if I've gotten my hair done recently, and it's funny because I haven't.
Mm.
Yeah. I started using the Grow Hair Serum immediately after Bear, and my hair has never felt thicker and softer. I also like how it's not oily or greasy, so you can use it on wet or dry hair. I signed up for the monthly subscription of the Grow Hair Serum, and it's nice because you get to save money on your order and you never run out of the product. Fun fact, Vegamore sells one bottle of Grow Hair Serum every 15 seconds on their website. That's how good this stuff really is. Elevate your hair wellness routine this year with Vegamore. For a limited time, get 20% off your first subscription order by going to vegamore.com/eastfam and use code EASTFAM at checkout. That's VEGAMOUR.com/eastfam code EASTFAM to save 20% off your first order. VEGAMOUR.com/EASTFAM, code EASTFAM. Let's get back to it. Andrew and I have been talking about this a lot lately, and I'm sure other parents can relate. It seems like we buy our kids clothes and they grow out of them instantly, which is why, literally instantly, which is why we are so glad we found the brand Posh Peanut. Listen closely, guys. Their clothes are amazing quality and made from viscose, from bamboo, so they stretch with your kid as they grow and are 4 times stretchier than cotton. They have the cutest patterns too, from florals and Barbie to Disney and Hot Wheels. They have something for every kid that every kid will love, and they're truly made to last.
Jed asked to wear his Hot Wheels pajamas every night, and it's honestly adorable. It is adorable. The fabric is really soft and stretchy, which comes in handy when you're still changing diaper.
Oh, for sure. Plus, I swear their clothes get even softer the more you wash them, which usually doesn't happen with kids' clothes.
We also love that their clothes are chemical-free, which means they're delicate enough for babies with sensitive skin, which is something we've been paying attention to for Bear.
Posh Peanut is made for infants and kids, but they also have sizes for moms and dads if you want the whole family to match. And if you're not a parent, consider this the perfect gift idea for any little one. For real, you guys, we love this brand and they're loved by over 1 million parents. Check them out.
Right now, Posh Peanut is offering our listeners 20% off your first order with promo code EASTFAM. Go to poshpeanut.com/EASTFAM and use promo code EASTFAM for 20% off your first order.
That's poshpeanut.com/EASTFAM, promo code EASTFAM. I'm headed there right now.
Let's get back to it.
Considering we spend every waking second of the day together.
But we're also pretty good on our own. That's what's interesting.
We're great on our own.
Well,
you know, but like now as a family.
Yeah.
I would say communication. Yes. Go out of your way to connect, be thought of, make sure the other person knows you're thinking of them.
Sean and I used to simultaneously watch movies together.
On FaceTime.
Yeah, that was fun.
That was fun.
Ready? Okay, I'm at 21:53. Ready? Go.
That was when we were dating and we were long distance. Yeah. That was fun.
All right, two more. Meals to help keep up milk supply.
I don't really know. All I've been told is like calories, substance, and hydration. So like protein, vegetables, like make sure you have some nutrition in there. Get in your caloric intake. And drink a lot of water.
Yeah, from a volume standpoint.
Yeah.
That feels right.
As I sit here while my stomach is growling so loud that you might be able to hear it.
We'll go get lunch after this. How to still love a friend when you really disagree with them about something such as parenting, who they're dating, life decisions, etc. I think it's important to, like, if you're a close friend, to share your perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really important. Gently and lovingly. I also have been trying to evaluate what my definition of friendship is, because I've been challenged that I might not be a good friend. I'm actually working through this myself. Like, what does it mean to be a good friend? Sometimes I feel like I'm just in friendships where it's convenient or fun, and when they don't be, when they're not fun anymore, then I'm less inclined to like want to talk to that person. And there's such beauty in the battle of like fighting through these little conflicts that makes that actually a meaningful relationship. I feel like I have really good friends.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I have fantastic siblings that like that barrier to exit is established. But I also know that there are friends in my life where it's like, oh, hey, it's easier if I don't get involved in this mess.
I think there's probably different levels, and I don't know if I'll communicate this well. I think loving a friend is loving them for who they are. So you don't want to love them only if they don't keep listening to rap music because you don't agree with the lyrics or whatever it is. I don't know. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah.
You should love them
stylistic
for who they
differences.
Are.
Yeah.
You can vote for different people. You can have different religious beliefs. You can do all these things and still love them for who they are. You can disagree with their opinions on things and still love them for who they are. I think that's very important, that you should love them as wholeheartedly as possible. Now, if it gets to be a relationship where their differences or their choices are causing harm to them, your relationship, or yourself, you can still love them from a distance. Like, we have both personally had friends where we've had to say, you know what? I love you. I support you, and I will be there for you if you need it. But spending time with you is harmful to our marriage or to our kids or whatever it is. So you have to, like, put more distance between you.
Man, that's a really unpleasant and challenging process. I'm thinking of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there is a process, though, to get to that point where it's like you should confront them. This is biblical.
Mm-hmm.
Then you confront them with a group of people if there's harm involved. And then next steps can be taken. But Anyway. All right. We'll end there. Thank you for listening. Hope you were able to take something away from our advice, maybe learn something new, get a little different perspective.
Or think, wow, they have a lot to work on.
But also curious, if you have something to add, leave a comment. We love when reading some of the YouTube comments are awesome. I love, that's like one of my favorite parts about what we do, is seeing other people interact. We're just trying to start conversations, which means you can carry on the conversation. And also, thanks as always for trusting us with your questions. We're not professional, so we hope we did okay. And if you made it this far and you haven't yet, please subscribe to the show. Give it a rating. We're just glad to be here, and we're grateful you are too. So, love you guys. Very appreciative. And we'll see you next week. That's all we got. I'm Andrew.
I'm Sean.
We're the East Fam. Out. All right, real quick for all of those listening out there. We don't ask for a lot of favors, I don't think. Babe, do we?
No.
But we're going to ask you a favor today, all right? If you're listening to Couple Things Podcast on Apple Podcasts specifically, will you please do us this short, quick favor?
We want to make sure you're staying up to date with our show, and Apple's latest iOS update has paused downloads for many listeners, and some of you have expressed our latest episodes aren't being recommended to you on Apple Podcasts anymore.
So here's how to make sure you're getting your episode. And again, this is for Apple Podcasts specifically. Open up that podcast app on your iPhone.
Search Couple Things and tap our show's icon.
And then in the top right corner, you might see a plus follow symbol. If you do, tap it to resume following the show.
If you get a prompt to, quote, turn on automatic downloads, say yes. That way, you'll get all of the episodes. Thank you so much, guys. We're so glad this update was brought to our attention, because we want to make sure we're reaching as many of you as we can.
Love y'all, and we really appreciate you doing this.